Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Wisconsin once again making international news for all the wrong reasons. And I love it because some broadcast outlets, as they talk about Michigan and Wisconsin, they seem to get the capitals mixed up.
Oh, yeah.
They were showing the dome in Lansing, which is a little different than the dome in Madison. People have been confusing the states, but nonetheless, it's the same problem. And you have to wonder, are these legislators doing this on behalf of their own constituencies, or is there a higher power, John, nationally, calling the shots in North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Michigan?
And I would note Ohio.
Ohio.
There's some machinations going on. And weirdly enough, Maricopa County, Arizona, where the Democrats swept into power in the last stages, some local Republicans.
But they're sore losers in the desert?
Sore losers in the, you know, amidst the freeways. So it's a very, you ask whether they're doing it on behalf of their constituents or some higher power. Sly, the higher power is their constituency. You're missing the connection here.
Well,
they are,
then,
in fact,
then,
representing their constituents. It just happens it isn't the people who vote in elections. It's the people who write checks.
It's not the people with the Colonial Ranch in Burlington?
I don't. Or at, there's actually a really nice restaurant my mom likes out there. But, no, I mean, this is an important thing to understand. The Republicans in Michigan, Wisconsin, and other Great Lakes states, to a large extent Ohio, you can even see it in some parts of Pennsylvania, although they've really been beaten down there politically, except at the legislative level. They made a compromise in the 2000s, and it was a really interesting situation. I remember all of these states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana to some extent, you know, these were places, Pennsylvania, these are places that were voting Democratic for president. Indiana, not so much, but a lot of them pretty regularly. And there were also, there was a lot of signs that the Democrats were really, you know, in a solid place. And that didn't mean Republicans always lost. They had to compete, though. And the way they had competed up until a certain point was by being center-right. You know, they were more conservative, but they were certainly men and women of those states. They were of the politics of that place, and they reflected it.
They reflected their local Rotary Club.
Right. And they were, and it didn't make them less conservative, and they could have battles, there's no question of that. But there's an interesting thing. They still believed, totally summed up, and it's totally summed up by Tommy Thompson, they still believed that with a combination of, you know, energy, good spirit, and a little bit of compromise here and there, they could win a majority of votes, right? For their ideas, that they could prevail in the battle of ideas and implement a lot of what they wanted. At a certain point in the 2000s, heading toward 2010, a lot of these people, Scott Walker's a classic example of it. In many ways, I would say Scott Walker. Scott Walker. In many ways, I'd say Scott Walker is the opposite of Tommy Thompson, right? Tommy Thompson believed he could win on the basis of, you know, hail fellow Will Met, some good ideas, and a lot of good campaigning. Scott Walker knew that wasn't the case, right? Robin Voss knew this wasn't the case. And so they decided to, instead of having that local Rotary Club, Main Street, as their constituency, that they would tap into a national set of allies, donors, think tanks, and they would take their cue from other people in other places. Now, what they were told is if they changed enough of the rules, if they attacked the labor unions, if they attacked voting rights, if they attacked trial lawyers, if they, you know, kind of really knocked down the infrastructure of civil society and, you know, frankly, a lot of groups that tended to be more supportive of Democrats, that they would always win. On November 6th, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, overwhelmingly in Pennsylvania, but even to some extent in some of these other states, they didn't win the way they were supposed to. They suffered, in Wisconsin and Michigan, severe setbacks. And so suddenly they're in this incredibly rough position where they sort of, you know, sold the future off, to bartered the future off to people from far away on a promise that they would always have power. And they didn't have power. I mean, they were about to really be checked and balanced by the voters.
Here is Robin Voss.
According to Speaker Robin Voss, who was criticized by Democrats for not attending the public hearing, in a separate press conference, he said had Governor Walker won the election, the same bills would have been proposed in January.
We have to do them now because I want to make sure that we do not get into this partisan rancor, which is what's happening, where just because a Republican offers it, every Democrat says it must be a bad idea.
Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald also commenting that they are preparing for a divide in the Capitol.
I'm concerned. I think that Governor-elect Evers is going to bring a liberal agenda to Wisconsin.
Speaker Voss continued to say these bills are designed to balance power. Senate Democrats disagree, saying
Scott Fitzgerald's worried that Tony Evers is a liberal. Huh. That's, you know, that's never happened in Wisconsin before. There's never been a liberal governor.
Well, the funny thing is that Tony Evers is, and I you and I've joked about this. I was talking to the Economist magazine back earlier in the fall. And I had this long explanation of something about Wisconsin, and the guy only took one line, or as is often the case, and totally appropriate, really good reporter, but you know, you really focused on one line, and I said that Tony Evers is a candidate from 1938. And what I was explaining is that he was emblematic of, you know, some deep traditions in Wisconsin. The rural progressive, somebody from Plymouth, Wisconsin, who had worked in a cheese factory, become a teacher. Tony Evers is a remarkably typical statewide elected official in the history of Wisconsin, right? Now, he brought in a ticket of some people who are really breaking boundaries and doing new things. I mean, Mandela Barnes, Sarah Godlewski, Josh Call, all. You know, people in their 30s, and so, and who also do bring some different.
And Doug LaFollette.
And Doug LaFollette, somebody who's actually literally is of the previous generations. But the bottom line here is that Tony Evers is not something foreign to Wisconsin. He's in many, many ways a classic Democrat who might get elected governor, right? And what he's proposed is something that historically would work very well, i.e. that, yes, he'd have some policies that were relatively liberal. He wouldn't get as far as he wanted on some things because he's got a legislature he's got to work with. But by the same token, many of these liberal policies, what Fitzgerald refers to as liberal policies, are very, very, very popular.
And well, so now we're getting to the crux of the matter. Right. Here's Tony Evers and Mike Cushay. This was recorded the Friday before Voss and Fitzgerald dropped the bomb, as Scott Walker would say. But here's Tony Evers with Mike Cushay.
Yeah, and I'm committed to working with the legislature to make sure that we accomplish things for the people of Wisconsin. That's what they elected me to do, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Speaker Voss said on this program a couple of weeks ago, he said, Tony Evers does not have a mandate. And so what we're trying to do is codify certain things that we've accomplished in the last 8 years. How do you view your victory? Do you see it as a mandate in any sense?
Of course I do. I spent the entire race talking about things that people in Wisconsin feel important about, whether it's our schools, whether it's our roads, whether it's health care. All those issues are issues that's why people voted for me. So, of course, I'm going to follow through on that. It's not that I'm going to fade into the background. And that's what concerns me about this initial piece, the fact that we were never consulted about it. That's an issue. And, it's going to be short term. It's going to be rushed through. It's going to be minimal public hearings. And that just doesn't work for the people of Wisconsin. They actually want us to accomplish things.
You know, the contrast in how Evers handles the situation versus the very sort of terse, defensive announcements made by Fitzgerald and Voss is quite striking.
Yeah, well, I mean, Voss and Fitzgerald seem like desperate, scared little men.
Little. Right?
People who have been confronted with the reality of their bad behavior. And now are trying to cover things up, trying to protect themselves, trying to use last shred of power they have to maintain their position. It's pathetic, and I think that any Republican, I mean, can you imagine, just imagine like Dwight Eisenhower, right, dealing with these guys. They would be shunted, not just to the back of the room, but out of the caucus. They wouldn't have a place. And I would even suggest a good conservative like Ronald Reagan or Barry Goldwater. Can you imagine if they thought, well, yeah, this is what our movement is, Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald. No, what they're doing is pathetic and embarrassing. And I think that one of the reasons why Tony Evers is so calm in this regard and why, he has handled it actually, if you look at the whole process here, really with a remarkable level of maturity in the interviews he's done and in his approach, is because he does understand that in the overall arc of things, yeah, they have taken some powers, Voss and Fitzgerald, and we'll see what Scott Walker does with the veto process. He may back off on a couple of things. Certainly there's some good advice he's been getting, I think, from Coles and some other folks saying, look, there's, you might be able to sign some of this and not sign other parts. But at the end of the day, some powers are going to be taken away from the governor and certainly from the attorney general, who's much more damaged in this regard. But Tony Evers understands one fundamental thing. The start of January, he and Mandela Barnes and Josh Call are going to be sworn in. They are going to hold those offices. They will hold offices that still have tremendous power, despite everything that the Republicans have tried to do. And they will have the bully pulpit. They will have the ability to, counterbalance in some very powerful ways what Voss and Fitzgerald are saying. We have not had that. We have not had that, Sly, for 8 years in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and really longer. Doyle was kind of checked out the last couple of years of his governorship.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument. And so you end up in a situation now where things are going to change. And I, frankly, think Tony Evers is very wise. I still think he is trying not to get in to the petty game.
Take the bait.
He doesn't want to get in the game with Voss and Fitzgerald. He'll work with them on things, and he may pressure them successfully via the Roger process. But at the end of the game, or at the end of the day, I apologize. At the end of the day, if he becomes one of them, right, then they do have the potential to win. If he rises above them, keeps talking to the people of Wisconsin in smart, good ways, I think he isolates them more and more. And I'll tell you, I think he does put some wedges, especially into Fitzgerald's caucus.
I don't think this is playing well with the public, and I'm not talking about, the vast majority of the people in Dane County. I'm talking about around the whole state.
Oh, yeah.
I heard Steve Scafidi, who, of course, is the former mayor of Oak Creek and a little more moderate than some of the other Republicans that are on the radio. He has a talk show on WTMJ now, taking calls on this. And he thought it was a terrible idea. He thought it was shameful. And I tell you, the callers, who are not liberals to his show, they didn't like it.
Yeah,
now, the other usual suspects, who are all part of the machine, so to speak, they were lying.
They were embarrassing. And again, desperate, scared, knowing that they're now in a difficult position.
All right, let me play. Here's Neil Heinen talking about Governor Walker.
Now, a WISC-TV editorial with editorial director Neil Heinen.
We saw an email today telling citizens appalled by the bills passed by Republican legislators in a rushed, extraordinary special session that the most powerful thing they can do is telephone or email Governor Walker's office and ask him to veto the bills. We were surprised that there were civic leaders who actually believed Governor Walker was willing to listen to reason, that an appeal to Walker's conscience and sense of what's right would actually succeed. Well, we haven't given up either. We can't believe this is how Governor Walker wants to be remembered, that his last act as governor was to sign a series of vindictive, petty, anti-democratic bills thwarting election results and ignoring the will of the people. Wisconsin's reputation has been badly damaged by Walker's party. He can begin to repair that damage and his legacy by vetoing these power-grabbing bills. Perhaps he can be persuaded to do the right thing. If you're willing to try, it couldn't hurt to try.
Well, there you go, John. Couldn't hurt to try.
Perhaps. And and more power to Neil for those, you know, appropriate words. I do think, you know, look, it is true that you shouldn't give up on, you should never give up on the demand that people do the right things. And so, yes, appealing to Walker, calling him, lobbying him, that is very important. My sense is that he may use his very powerful veto pen to strike out a couple things. Potentially, that's how he tries to, you know, improve his legacy.
He could also take that pen with the Wisconsin veto and maybe make it worse.
And don't underestimate that power.
Although some of that power was taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, yeah, I mean, he can't, like add money to things.
Right.
But here's the important thing to understand about it. That editorial, parallel to a lot of editorials from around Wisconsin, will have a certain impact. I wonder if a thing written by someone else might have more, and that is Charlie Sykes's article. I don't know if you read
it. I have not seen Charles J. Sykes.
Is there anyone who made Scott Walker more than Charlie Sykes?
No,
I don't think so, and I think Charlie Sykes would acknowledge that. He wrote a piece maybe Thursday or Friday, in which he said, you know, this would be a huge mistake to sign these bills. And he was arguing it as somebody who's been a longtime friend of Scott Walker's, essentially saying, look, you still have some future politically. You have no idea, because you're surrounded by people telling you you're doing everything right. You have no idea how incredibly unpopular this is. And if you do sign this, this is going to be a burden you carry with you for a very long time. And I thought, you know, give Sykes his credit for speaking directly to Walker.
Exactly. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices. But we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and, of course, the United Steelworkers. All right, so speaking of all shenanigans 24/7, what's going on in North Carolina is just absolutely stunning. I mean, but just as a little setup here, Paul Ryan the other day was speaking about the Republicans losing all these House races in California. Don't respond to this. I'm going to play this, and then we'll get to the North Carolina story. Here's Paul Ryan.
California just defies logic to me. We We had a lot of wins that night. We were only down 26 seats the night of the election. And 3 weeks later, we lost basically every contested California race. This election system they have, I can't begin to understand what ballot harvesting is.
Okay, so we have that. And now we travel to the other side of the country. This is from North Carolina.
A young lady came to the door.
Daytisha Montgomery recalls a knock at the door in October. A woman there to collect her absentee ballot.
I signed it, gave it to her. It was not sealed.
But it was never turned in. Investigators now collecting accounts like hers. In the state of North Carolina, it's illegal for anyone other than a close relative or the postman to collect an absentee ballot. But neighbors here say when they got a knock on the door, they handed theirs over, assuming it was just part of the process. At the center of the probe, the operations of Republican consultant McCrae Dowless to collect them. He worked for Republican Mark Harris. Harris won by 905 votes. Investigators were already looking into irregularities, but after initial results came even more concerns. Ballots may have been tampered with and counted or thrown out. The State Board of Elections confirms Dowless and an associate requested 775 absentee ballot applications where Montgomery lives in Bladen County. 61% of absentee ballots were cast for Harris, though only 19% of them by registered Republicans. No comment from Dowless or Harris.
I know next time to go in person and vote.
Now an election hangs in the balance. Katie Beck, NBC News, Elizabethtown, North Carolina.
Now we find out that McCrae Dowless was referred to prosecutors 2 years ago. They knew this was going on, and yet the Bush Justice Department didn't do anything about it. And Harris hired him even after he knew what he had been doing in the past.
Yeah, well, I like to say the Republicans have been going on and on for a number of years now about voter fraud.
Uh-huh, a lot.
They finally found it.
Yeah, right.
And we may have to get, now that Kris Kobach has been defeated for governor of Kansas by the people of that state, and a great rebuke to some of the worst politics in America, he's out of a job. Maybe he can reconstitute that commission and go after the Republican Party.
Correct.
I don't think Kobach's going to do that, or Trump either. But it's a really fascinating thing, because this does get to the awfulness, if you will, of Paul Ryan. Because here was Ryan, at the late stages, after having managed his caucus into a crisis situation, make them, literally the errand boys for Donald Trump, well summed up by that fabulous Saturday Night Live routine where he came in, as the ice cream soda jerk serving ice cream to Donald Trump. So he managed his party into a crisis situation and then, of course, abandoned them. Said, well, I'm not going to get on the ballot on this year. It's horrible. You guys go do it. And then when it all crashes and burns, after he has raised and spent tens of millions of dollars on behalf of the most negative, crude campaigning in the modern age, he blamed, or suggested at least, that there was something wrong with the processes by which his candidates were defeated. And particularly pointing at California, where this vote harvesting or whatever, it's counting ballots, right? It's finding all the votes and counting.
Well, in California, people mail their ballots in, so they come in, they come in a little slowly.
And you know what? If Paul Ryan and others had stood up for the U.S. Postal Service and invested a little more resources in it, maybe we could have overnight delivery, right? But the fact of the matter is that it takes time to get all, especially ballots that are cast at late stages, and you get them counted, you do it right. There's nobody, the California Republicans aren't suggesting, not honest Republicans, that there's, some sort of fraud here. But Ryan went out and suggested that. And I think you did exactly the right thing. When you connect his statement there with the reality of what was being done, hopefully without his knowledge, but certainly on his watch, right, by his candidates out in tight races around the country, and one of his candidates, it gets to the heart of the matter. We are not seeing evidence around the country of wrongdoing by Democrats. We're not seeing people, committing voter fraud. in the way that, that Trump and Kobach and even Ryan here suggest. What we're seeing is a combination of what looks like actual classic voter fraud in the case of this North Carolina race and, you know, post-election shenanigans, power grabs, you know, political gambits designed to make it harder to vote. And it's interesting to note, by the way, Sly, that even as, you know, you're seeing this stuff exposed down there, Republicans in the North Carolina legislature have been scheming to try and make it harder to vote there. In Wisconsin, of course, part of this whole initiative that our Republican friends just did in the legislature supposed to make it harder to vote or at least limit early voting, things of that nature. In Michigan, they elected a remarkable woman, voting rights activist, campaign finance reformer, the first Democratic attorney or Democratic Secretary of State of Michigan in, I believe, 28 years, right? She's elected on a total reform platform. She's a very straight shooter. Even Democrats are a little uncomfortable with her because she really is, looks like somebody's really going to kind of try and get it right.
The real deal.
Yeah, and they, on Thursday, I believe, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, the Michigan State Senate, Republican control, began a process of taking her powers away from her.
Of course. Of course. All right, so back to North Carolina here. This is Dan McCready, who, conceded, had lost by 900 votes on Election Day. Here he is yesterday making his first national appearance on MSNBC.
You know, I think it's even worse, Rachel, than he's not just an operator. He's a criminal, and he's a felon. And I think it is amazing that my opponent, Mark Harris, went out and hired a convicted felon who was under investigation for absentee ballot fraud to do his absentee ballot program. And apparently he got what he paid for because Mark Harris didn't just hire this felon. He actually recommended his services to others.
In terms of...
Let me ask you where you think this is going to go. In North Carolina, do you think there's going to be a new election?
I think so, and I think it's fantastic. I mean, I have long been an advocate for solving the problems of democracy with more democracy, and so.
But shouldn't there be two new elections?
Yeah, primary and
because without a doubt. The incumbent, it appears, may have been cheated out of the primary.
Exactly. Once somebody has been proven to be a fraudulent player, as this guy has, you should.
And this Pettinger had complained to the Republican Party in North Carolina that there were shenanigans going on, and the Republican Party of North Carolina did nothing because they didn't mind that this right winger had won the primary.
Yeah, I think in many cases preferred him, and so yes, of course it's if necessary. I think you could theoretically simply have the general election if there was, you know, if you'd had uncontested primaries or, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to recreate the whole process, but where you have an election that has degenerated into crisis, right, that is non-functional, and either where you've seen massive fraud, or frankly, where you have a result that cannot be determined. This is one of the worst, I go back to 2000 in Florida between Bush and Gore. At the end of the day, a fair argument can be made. I actually think that Gore, if you'd had an honest recount, Gore would have prevailed. But a good argument can be made that it was just too close to call. And you could have re-voted Florida. Bob Kerry, the senator from Nebraska, proposed that. And that is not a radical idea. Back in 1975, after an incredibly close U.S. Senate race in New Hampshire, it came down to two votes, and it kept going back and forth, depending on which ballot. They literally poured the ballots out on a table in the Senate and went through them. The Senate itself couldn't get to the heart of the matter. And so they essentially forced a new election. They had a new U.S. Senate election, which was decided by a clear majority. I think it was John Durkin was the guy who won it. And so we can have a new election. That's the way to solve crises like this. You don't go into the courts forever and try to, you know, have somebody declare somebody the winner or something like that. Let the people sort it out. And I think it is possible that that's going to happen. I think even, by the way, North Carolina Republicans, realizing how much trouble they're in here, seem to be signaling that they might be open to that.
It is fascinating. And of course, now that Democrats control the House, it would be harder for the Republicans to push this guy through as they would have at one time.
I don't think he could be seated at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's we go back to, what was it, 1984, the bloody eighth in Indiana between Frank McCluskey and some guy named McIntyre. What was it, four votes?
Yeah, it was. And
there wasn't fraud.
Yeah, but there was a case where I would have, again, I would have held the new election. I actually believe that, I believe in recounting, and I believe you can decide an election by a vote or two. And that's fair. That's the game that you've jumped into when you run for office. But if there is real conflict where it genuinely seems to be going back and forth, or again where you have fraud, just have a new election. Why is it so hard? We live in this fantasy that just because you've gone through the whole process and the TV networks have not shown entertainment shows for a night to do election results, that it's all locked in and you can never do it again for 2 years. We have special elections all the time when a seat goes vacant. It is certainly fair to declare a seat unfilled because you can't determine who the winner is or because the apparent winner got there via fraud.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
We work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.